Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome. It's too early for us to get into the hairy budgetary hijinks here as Congress tries to avoid a government shutdown on this Friday. We can guess that the media truly hope for Speaker Johnson to get dumped, and we have an endless cycle of Republican speaker dumping because these people would really like Speaker Hakeem. And liberals love to have their arrogance and say, the Republicans cannot govern. The Democrats are much better at party discipline. Well, that's in part because the media, the Democrat media, is part of the Democrat discipline machine. If you were a Democrat that wanted to make trouble, you would get no rewards from the media for making Nancy Pelosi's life difficult. Discipline. Discipline was the thing. If I may use a phrase from the Jungle Book movie. Speaking of machines, St. Martin's Press, one of the big Manhattan publishers, put out a new memoir this week by Christine Blasey Ford. Back in 2018, at a crucial moment in the Brett Kavanaugh nomination for the Supreme Court, Christine claimed she was sexually assaulted by Kavanaugh when he was 17 and she was 15. According to her tale, he was on top of her in a bedroom at a house party, but she escaped him. But she didn't know where it was, and she didn't know when. It was sometime in the summer of 1982? This reminds me of E. Jean Carroll, who accused Donald Trump of sexual assault in the departure store. What year was it? I couldn't tell you what year it was. She uncorked it all in a 2019 book titled, What Do We Need Men For? That book was published by who? Oh, by this very same St. Martin's Press. How interesting. See, here's the whole point. When Bill Clinton had people accusing him of sexual assault, they didn't get book deals. Anybody remember the book by Paula Jones? There wasn't one. There was a book by Kathleen Willey. It came out in 2007. It was published by WorldNet Daily Books. I guess that came out in time for Hillary's presidential campaign, the first one. But a little late. And not with a prestigious publisher, which made it easier for the mainstream media to go, who cares? Juanita Broderick, who accused Clinton of rape, came out with a book in 2017. It was self-published. I wasn't aware. I was today years old when I noticed that that book came out. I mean, maybe I remember it in 2017. I didn't remember it today. Now, someone who wasn't raped, Jennifer Flowers, who said she had consensual affairs for 12 years or whatever with Clinton, came out with her memoir Passion and Betrayal in 1995. The publisher was Emery Dalton Communications. Honk if you've ever heard of that. So this is the whole thing. You accuse a Clinton, no publisher in Manhattan cares. You know, maybe Regnery will give you a book. But, you know, the big publishers, they do the books that enrich the anti-Republican accusers. So Christine Blasey Ford has a new memoir. And, of course, the liberal media love it. You can go to the Amazon page. The Washington Post says, a blisteringly personal memoir, a thoughtful exploration of what it feels like to become a main character in a major American reckoning. A reckoning. Like Brett Kavanaugh had it coming, as did all the white male Catholic conservatives. A reckoning. This is the same thing they called the riots in 2020, all the George Floyd riots. It's a reckoning. Time magazine blurb. By the time the hearing ended, Ford had done more than prove herself a credible witness. For millions of women and men, she had replaced Kavanaugh as the protagonist in the nomination narrative. Yeah, what a Democrat rag, Time magazine. And, of course, The Atlantic, which really hates Republicans. Ford showed what American politics might look like if Americans truly saw the people our society usually silences and grinds underfoot. What did we just point out? When you accuse Trump or you accuse Trump's Supreme Court nominee, you don't get ground underfoot. You don't get silenced. You get a major book deal. You get interviewed on all the networks. You get big huzzas from Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar and Sonny Hostin. Then, of course, come the celebrity or politician tributes. Anita Hill. I was engrossed. What I heard in Ford's voice and a choice of words was a commitment to tell the truth. That's just perverse. Neither one of these people had a credible accusation. And yet they both stand up for each other. Nancy Pelosi, I applaud the courage of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford to come forward to share her story. I'm doing this stupid impression and I can barely see the words because I'm shaking my head back and forth. Anyway, and of course, then there's that statesman Jimmy Kimmel. Quote, it was striking to see someone questioned before the Senate that actually answered questions. Brett Kavanaugh answered a lot of questions, you dope. And, of course, then, America Ferrera of the Barbie movie. Ford's amazing and a true patriot. Gee, why would she come forward when she could be honored by Nancy Pelosi and Jimmy Kimmel and movie stars? One of the most annoying parts of these interviews was saying, why would you come forward at this point? This is the big picture. Christine was brought forward for a political purpose, to destroy this Kavanaugh nomination. Just like Anita Hill, this was not a court of law where you would require real evidence, real corroboration, or witnesses. This was a political kangaroo court, just like the Hill-Thomas hearings. These liberal reporters sound like middle schoolers when they act stupid and say, oh, why would you come forward? Because they are Democrats trying to be a good Democrat. Now, Anita Hill and Christine Ford both had this line of, I didn't really want to go on TV. I just wanted to destroy his nomination without coming forward. Oh, that's what we're supposed to admire your courage when you wanted to just destroy his nomination without actually being on the record? Like your average anonymous source in the Washington Post or the New York Times? Nice try, but the Democrats said, no, we need you to go on the record. And maybe there's a lucrative booking deal involved. Let's remember this. When we're talking about how all the Clinton accusers didn't get big payoffs, Anita Hill got a two-book deal for $1 million. That's back in the 90s. Newt Gingrich got $1 million book deal, and they made him renounce it because he was a politician. You can't do that. And then a couple of years later, the Clintons scored major book deals and nobody in the media cared. Double standards. If it wasn't for double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all. Well, on TV, this broke out last Sunday. Big burst of publicity from CBS News Sunday morning. With reporter Tracy Smith. The last time I was noticing Tracy Smith, she did a big puff piece on Kate Cox, the abortion movement's hero. She wanted to get an abortion. She had to go to another state. And of course, now she was in Jill Biden's press box at the State of the Union, which is, you know, the Biden box at the State of the Union, CBS News, pretty much the same group of people, same political motivations. But I got to say this, Tracy Smith, she was publicizing this book, but at the very least, she did remind people of what Kavanaugh said back in 2018.
This confirmation process has become a national disgrace.
And a short time later, an emotional Brett Kavanaugh testified that Ford had it all wrong.
If the party described by Dr. Ford happened in the summer of 1982... on a weekend night, my calendar shows all but definitively that I was not there. I categorically and unequivocally deny the allegation against me by Dr. Ford. I never had any sexual or physical encounter of any kind with Dr. Ford.
We reached out to Justice Kavanaugh for this story, but got no response to a request made through the court.
Now, of course, Kavanaugh isn't going to revisit this debacle where he was shamed and embarrassed, you know, even if none of it was true. Many people believed it was true because they wanted it to be true. But to object now or to go on camera, that would make this woman's book that much bigger. But at least there's a reminder of what he said. Then Tracy Smith also gets credit for actually pressing forward with what the Kavanaugh camp would say to push back. That no one in that teenage circle in the 80s recalls this party that she's talking about. Now, she didn't explicitly say the woman you turned to, who was your big friend, who was going to verify you, Leland Kaiser, said, I don't think so. But at least Tracy Smith is sort of pushing her a little bit to say, so how do you respond to the other side?
Let's go over some of the things that supporters of Justice Kavanaugh have said. One of the big things that they said is, why is it that no one can recall that night in the way that you recall it, that mm-hmm. there was that party?
Well, there were so many parties in high school, and this was a pretty unremarkable one. And his friends not being able to recall that evening, I guess, just doesn't surprise me, because everyone sort of got together almost every night to hang out together. So
do you think that lends weight to his side of the story, that no one can remember it?
Well, it seems like they think that for sure, and that was how they portrayed that night. And
but to you, do you think that bolsters his side of the story, that no one can remember it?
No, to me it doesn't bolster his story, because I think, like, for survivors out there, if you know it happened to you, so if no one ever believed you, or no one thought it happened, or no one saw it, and there are people that are assaulted all the time where no one else was even there, and that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
This is not what the other networks were going to do when it came to Christine Blasey Ford. Now, one of the things none of them did in these interviews, these book promotions, was talk about the other accusers of Kavanaugh. Now, why would you do that? Why don't you ask Christine Blasey Ford if she believed the other accusers? People didn't really find them to be quite in the Anita Hill category. Deborah Ramirez said in an interview published in The New Yorker back then in 2018, she claimed during the 1983-84 school year at Yale, where she and Kavanaugh were freshmen, Kavanaugh exposed himself to her during a drinking game and told her to kiss it. Wow, that sounds a lot like the Paula Jones story, doesn't it? Kavanaugh obviously denied that entirely. And then there was Julie Swetnick. She was pushed by that champion, Michael Avenatti. You know, back then, the media really loved Michael Avenatti before he went to prison. Swetnick said she observed Kavanaugh at parties where women were verbally abused, inappropriately touched, and yes, even gang raped. Swetnick claimed she witnessed Kavanaugh participating in lining up outside a bedroom where numerous boys were waiting for their turn to rape a girl. And NBC ran this crap on the nightly news. Kangaroo Court. All right, CBS on Sunday. Monday morning on Morning Edition on National Public Radio, the interviewer was Michelle Martin. I found that very interesting because Michelle McQueen, before she was married, Michelle McQueen did a major, huge 2020 back in the 90s promoting Anita Hill. I believe it was promoting a book called Strange Justice that was all pro-Hill and anti-Thomas. So we're still on the case here. Now, at least Martin began the story by noting Kavanaugh has vehemently denied any wrongdoing, but that's basically about as big as it got. She started the whole piece by saying, Christine Blasey Ford was enjoying life as a college professor, mom, and avid surfer when she learned that Brett Kavanaugh was on a shortlist to be nominated to the Supreme Court in 2018. She felt she had to do something because she says Kavanaugh had sexually assaulted her at a party when they were both teenagers, and she thought lawmakers should know. See, notice that she just says lawmaker. She doesn't say, so she went to Senator Dianne Feinstein, who is a Democrat senator in her state. And she and Feinstein started cooking up how they were going to go after Kavanaugh. So you can't, it can't be presented as partisan or political. It's all, and then they start talking about how Ford was a surfer and you've got to take the wave and maybe you wipe out. So Ford said she tried to share her story privately. And all the questions then are very, they're facilitating. They're not really challenging. Michelle Martin, why did you think that was important to do? She says, I felt like as a citizen, it's our responsibility to weigh in when we have relevant information for a job of that level of esteem and importance. Okay. Then Michelle Martin's like, you saw Anita Hill and what happened. Did you think it would be like that or did you think it would be different? See, these are not questions about, are you telling the truth? That's just assumed. You know, there's no audio of Brett Kavanaugh that just says Kavanaugh is vehemently denied. Martin, one of the things that surprised me, you said the committee did not want to hear from you. You know, Anita Hill, they had the Senate Judiciary Committee was all males. But did you think it would be different all these years later that they didn't really want to hear from you? I don't buy that, honestly. The Democrats on that committee wanted her to come forward. I mean, if she's claiming in this book, I mean, I'd like to know who didn't really want to hear from you. Because Dianne Feinstein wanted that story out, and so did all the media. Then Michelle Martin, what was it like to be in the middle of that? What made you finally decide to cross that threshold? You were not sure you were going to go through with it. Why did you do it? I mean, you notice all these questions are sort of basically goading her to explain, how did you do it? Why did you do it? Did you have doubts? That's the extent of the questioning. I suppose I should really underline this point. I should have started with this point when it comes to NPR. How did the Hill-Thomas hearings begin? With a story by NPR and Nina Totenberg. That's how it started. So NPR, here again, is the network that'll run slimy tales to destroy a conservative nominee. And then they'll romanticize the accuser years later when they get a big book deal. Then the next day, Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Once again, it was Gross. The headline, for Christine Blasey Ford, the fallout of the Kavanaugh hearing is ongoing. Now, we should point out all of these interviews underline how she says she received a lot of death threats. I'm not going to deny that those occurred, but it's a little crass to discuss all the death threats that Christine Blasey Ford is claiming and not mention that a guy in an Uber got out of a car in Brett Kavanaugh's neighborhood with the intent to kill him. But the picture all these liberal media outlets want to show you is there's a whole bunch of crazy, violent right-wingers out there. Or maybe they're all cowards who just threaten to kill you when they have no intention of doing so, but they scared you anyway. We will underline, death threats suck. Nobody should call and make those. But the media has a real tendency to drag that weapon out and say, blankety blank, received death threats, and then ignore the actual death threat that's standing in Brett Kavanaugh's neighborhood. I will remind you, NPR would not do a story when that occurred. Not a story. This is how pathetic. National taxpayer-funded radio. Oh, no, Tim, it's only 2%. Baloney. As we've explained, we'll explain it again here. Now's your 30 seconds on how the Corporation for Public Broadcasting sends taxpayer dollars called community service grants to NPR affiliates. Then NPR affiliates send the money back to Washington. That's called money laundering. And then they say, only 2% of our money is government money. That's baloney. And nobody should buy it, but they do. So Terry Gross starts the whole show This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As a heads up to our listeners, the introduction I'm about to give describes a sexual assault. Not an alleged sexual assault. This is the way they are. She testified at Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing that he sexually assaulted her. And then she goes and explains the whole thing. She reads this whole story about, you know, he pinned her down. He tried to take off her clothes, blah, 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 blah. They run this whole long paragraph. No mention in this one. Kavanaugh denies it. You know, not even the sentence that Michelle Martin had. Terry Gross's first question, she says, "Welcome to Fresh Air. How did you write your book without re-traumatizing yourself?" And then Ford says, "I did re-traumatize myself, having to go back through everything and relive it." Yeah. "Why did you do it?" "I did it all for the money, for the Benjamins." How about that, my boy Ben? The Benjamins. See, nobody's going to say she's doing this for the money and the celebrity and the fame. And she, you know, she gave a big heroic speech to the American Civil Liberties Union of California, Southern California. She's a hero on the left. They love her. Mark Judge, who she accused of being in on this little rape session. Mark Judge worked here at the Media Research Center for a short time, many years ago. Mark Judge says she makes $50,000 a speech. That's how much she's suffering from being famous. You know, if you go to their websites, they'll just say, well, there's a sliding fee. You know, you got to actually call and inquire. We'll figure out how much money you got, and then we'll charge you $50K for this woman to be re-traumatized for $50,000 a pop. Now, let's just understand, this is most of an hour. You go to the NPR website, they says the interview lasts 36 and a half minutes, but that's not including their, I wouldn't call them commercial breaks, but promotional breaks, where they say, coming up later on All Things Considered, all the conservatives we won't consider. Maybe a traffic update, you know, in every local market. And they might have to say, the following on National Public Radio is brought to you by the following four leftist foundations that think we should redistribute all the wealth and give it all to racial reparations, you know. For a just, verdant, and equitable future. They use those kinds of slogans. But, you know, it's most of an hour. There's one other segment in this show that's like 7 minutes. So most of the hour is Blasey Ford. And of course, yes. So Gross asked these questions that clearly suggest this is not an alleged assault. She said the Kavanaugh hearing was traumatic for you. And of course, there was the assault itself. Do you think the hearing was even more traumatizing than the assault? See, are we seeing a pattern? There's no question that this happened. Terry Gross is like, nope, I'm all in. There is no doubt. He is guilty. Remove him from the court. And then she says, and also your credibility was seriously challenged. So what was your reaction to that? It's a little vague, don't you think? Some people said you didn't have a corroborating witness at all. We at NPR run around saying the fact that Hunter Biden was peddling influence, there's no evidence to that. But you're never going to say there's no evidence that Christine Ford can provide that really proves she was assaulted by Brett Kavanaugh. Then they get to the threats. Your family was basically hiding out in hotels because there were so many threats. How are you brave enough to go on in spite of those threats? Then Gross talks about how this would, there's, you know, you're coming at these accusations that you're making from two perspectives. One would be it was good for all victims of sexual assault in terms of sexual assault. See, they always say that. Like, it's really good for you to come forward and reaffirm victims of sexual assault. This is not a line they use when Bill Clinton assaulted me or when Tara Reid says Joe Biden sexually assaulted me on Capitol Hill. I don't necessarily have to believe that story to say they all wanted that to go away. Tara Reid isn't going to get an hour on NPR. Anyway, this would be good for all victims of sexual assault. And two, if this is true, it would be good to keep Kavanaugh off the Supreme Court. She said, if this is true. Wow. That was a sudden breakdown. But then again, you know, most of this is a lot of the same questions with Michelle Martin. Like, how did you decide you were going to testify? How do you decide once you got there? You weren't expecting all these attempts to discredit you. Oh, come on! You weren't expecting efforts to discredit you. Oh, and then you had to go. You were supposed to go through a murder board so you'd know how to answer the questions. Look, all of this is you're in the middle of a proceeding helping the Democrats. And if you don't think the Republicans are going to try to keep Kavanaugh from being destroyed, how much of a moron are you? And if you're that much of a moron, why are you testifying? I don't believe any of that. This woman's a professor of psychology. You think she doesn't understand what she's getting into? But that's the way they do it. They're like, oh, sweet Polly Purebred went to the Senate. Look what happened. So then every time they go to a promotional break for the weather or the traffic or whatever, Terry Gross does have this habit of always repeating for people who may just be tuning in. She says over and over, she accused him of sexually assaulting her at a party when she was 15 and he was 17. She describes the hearing from her point of view and describes the death threats against her. You know, every like 10 minutes, she reads that again. So Terry Gross says, you know, so you went to your therapist and asked her, would it be therapeutic if I testified? And the therapist just laughed. What did the therapist tell you? Yeah, we both had a little bit of a light moment there at the idea that sharing your trauma with the government. Laughter, laughter. Trauma. Always just assumed. Now, late in this interview, I've got this printed out on 8 pages, and this is at the top of page 6. Terry Gross says, the Republicans were basically saying that you could have easily confused somebody else with Brett Kavanaugh. There's no evidence that the person who assaulted you, if in fact you were assaulted, was really Brett Kavanaugh and not somebody you confused with him. So how are you going to fight against that with therapy records? Did you expect to be put on trial yourself? This was basically Christine Blasey Ford wanted to proved to the committee that she was in therapy over this alleged assault. That's where that's coming from. But here again, she sort of says, if in fact you were assaulted, but remember, she's putting this in the mouth of the Republicans. And then says, did you expect to be put on trial yourself? Now, in any judicial proceeding, whoever's making the accusation is going to be cross-examined. Is that called put on trial yourself? Or is it simply being cross-examined? You know, this is the way the Democrats want this to work. The accuser comes forward and says, he assaulted me. And the accused knuckles under immediately, says, I'm sorry. I'll slink off and never do anything again. And Terry Gross then starts talking about how, once again, Ford was getting smeared and getting death threats and having to hide out. See, getting smeared. It's getting smeared to actually challenge her account. Now, it's one thing if somebody had said Christine Ford is a Marxist-Leninist. You know, that's not what we're talking about. They're saying she was smeared because people said you don't have any evidence. Terry Gross does say alleged assault one more time. I've been trying to stay away from the specifics of the alleged assault because I don't want to trigger you. But still, like, you're talking about that whole experience. You'll be talking about it with a lot of other people, too, because your book was just published and people will be reading the book. What was it like for you to return to that conversation and have to talk about it again? See, all of this is poor you. You're going to have to go all over the country and be interviewed on radio so you can make more money. Book royalties, book royalties, book royalties. There's words that didn't come up. And then Terry Gross, you didn't succeed in derailing Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation, but you did succeed in raising awareness of a sexual assault. See, most of the time, it's just assumed she's right, that she's true. She never proved it, but Terry Gross and NPR is going to keep saying this. Remember, these are the people that lecture you about misinformation and disinformation and no evidence that Joe Biden was helping Hunter Biden with his clients, which we all know at this point is obvious. It is the truth. But Terry Gross is like, oh, a gazillion women got in touch with you. Many women just felt so affirmed by hearing you talk and by hearing you have the courage to talk. Has it been helpful for you to get that kind of response from women who gave you the support and who praised you for coming forward? See? I mean, that's basically the whole approach to the interview in a nutshell. It's all, oh, you're so brave. This is just what they did on The View. Oh, you're just so brave to come forward. Oh, you're wonderful. You're just like Anita Hill. We love you all. And then Terry Gross ends. Thank you so much for talking with us. I know some of this must be hard for you, but I really appreciate you doing it, and I appreciate you writing the book. Yes, of course you all do. You appreciate her writing the book. You're willing to make her a very wealthy woman because she's doing the messaging you want. And if you're accusing Bill Clinton or some Democrat, you don't get a book deal and you don't get an hour on national public radio. Ah, yes. And then there, you know, again, we're talking about E. Jean Carroll accusing Donald Trump of rape. We had this case this week where Donald Trump decided to sue George Stephanopoulos and ABC News for Stephanopoulos saying that Trump was held liable for rape in the E. Jean Carroll case, which is not true. The jury tried to downplay it a little and say he was guilty of sexual assault. I think, look, does it make that much of a difference? I mean, let's be gross for a second. You know, they're basically saying, well, we don't think there was penetration, but it was still sexual assault. Look, if you're a politician, it doesn't matter much, you know, to what degree the sexual assault is. If you believe there was a sexual assault, then that person has no character. This is the whole point, is none of these people want you to remember that Joe Biden was accused of a sexual assault. That person is, you know, vanishes. I think she went to Russia, actually. But, I mean, the whole idea that, you know, anybody can accuse a Democrat of sexual assault, it's basically just not allowed. But here's just the shamelessness of Stephanopoulos, if we may say this for a minute, since we've been talking about the Clinton accusers today. He sits there with Nancy Mace and he's like, Trump was found liable for rape and you're backing him anyway. And she didn't really push back with it. It's like, Bill Clinton was accused of rape and you worked for him for years. How does that make you feel? You and James Carville defended him against every sexual assault victim. Now, remember, Stephanopoulos only served the first term with Clinton. But, of course, he did all of this stuff in 92, shutting down people. And he was there when Paula Jones came forward. And he was there to try to shut down Gary Aldrich when Gary Aldrich had a tell-all book about Clinton. Stephanopoulos was always there to shoot that stuff down. He's still doing the same thing, but they call it ABC News. Now, I don't think Trump's probably going to succeed in this lawsuit. Not in the way E. Jean Carroll succeeded. He's sitting there saying a jury found him liable for rape. A judge found him liable. And here again, where it's like, okay, George, we're in Manhattan where they voted like 90%+ for Biden. We found a jury that'll say that Trump did anything. We'll find a judge who's a hardcore Democrat to say, yes, let's all hold him accountable, not for rape, just for rape, but for defamation, for daring to say it was not true. And now he's on the, you know, what is it, $88 million he's on the hook for because he keeps defaming her by denying it happened? Has that ever happened to Bill Clinton? Do you remember anybody holding Bill Clinton accountable for defamation and saying you owe us $80 million and stop defending yourself as innocent? Because every time you defend yourself as innocent, she goes back to court and asks for another $80 million. It's just a little bit crazy. And this is the whole point that we're always making here at Newsbusters, is the news media ran around in the Trump years going, oh, we're not at war. We're at work. It's our job to hold all politicians accountable. And we all know that's just ridiculous. Because then the Democrats get in power, and then where's the accountability machine? Well, it done broke down. Sitting on the side of the road, rusted. So, you know, Hunter Biden, the hearing came this week. Hunter Biden was supposed to testify in public. Remember, they had this big little stunt. Big little stunt. In January, Hunter Biden comes to the Hill for 5 minutes and says, I want a public hearing, not a private hearing. And the networks covered that. Then on February 28, Hunter Biden showed up for a hearing behind closed doors. The networks actually covered that too. Now, maybe not in a big way. There's like 2 minutes. But when Hunter skipped the public hearing he allegedly wanted this week, they all skipped it with him. And this is where you just say, you networks don't have news judgment. You have Biden told me not to cover that. That's not judgment. That's following orders. Now, NBC did 2 minutes. But ABC and CBS did nothing. PBS did nothing. NPR did nothing. And even those prestigious national newspapers, you know, Democracy Dies in Darkness, did nothing. I was actually really shocked. I came in to the office, grabbed the newspapers, the ones we get in real time, the Washington Times, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. Right now here in Herndon, we're getting USA Today in the mail, like a day or two behind. So we have the USA Today archived. But you'd have to guess they didn't have the Hunter Biden hearing because it went into mid-afternoon. USA Today shuts down at like 2:30 in the afternoon. So there's a lot of times something happens and they're like, well, you won't have it the next day because we shut down before the grade school does. Anyway, you know, self-respecting newspapers go till at least 6 p.m. Not you losers. But the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal didn't have any story. I kept rummaging through these pages going, you got to be kidding me. There's not a story at all. I was like, give me two paragraphs on A22. There's nothing. It's just ridiculous. You know, and PBS had time for 8 minutes on the potential government shutdown. So, you know, Lisa Desjardins and those people on the Hill had something to report on that day, but somehow they couldn't find the Biden impeachment hearing. See, now I know there are Republicans who says, well, look, it's not enough to rise to the level of impeachment. Maybe. But, you know, they tried to call an impeachment hearing to give it some more heft. And then the networks are like, no, don't care. I don't care what you call it. Unless you called it a bloodbath hearing. Oh, no. But I mean, it's just, you know, they just didn't cover it whatsoever. Now, so they did 8 minutes, PBS NewsHour, 8 minutes on the potential government shutdown, 5 minutes on what they all called the controversial Texas law, where they actually tried to enforce the border because Biden won't. PBS had 5 minutes on the Biden administration trying to kill off the gas-powered automobile. That's crazy pants, but they all present it like, oh, how interesting. We're all going to drive electric vehicles and nothing will ever go wrong. And then they, of course, gave almost 7 minutes to a Mississippi police goon squad, apparently self-described goon squad, that brutalized some black men because white cops assaulting black men. They love that. That gets 7 minutes. Hunter Biden, nothing. Then I went again to National Public Radio. No story. They call their show All Things Considered. There was no considering that. NPR's homepage the next day was topped by their hot story. New details on Rupert Murdoch's British phone hacking scandal of 2011. It's 2024. And the hot news is Rupert Murdoch, 2011. It was the hottest story from you-know-who, David Folkenflik. Because he does a story on Murdoch or Fox News about once a week or something. Maybe more than once a week. Because, boy, he loved that Dominion lawsuit. Now, NPR had a Biden mention on their homepage. Their young White House reporter, Deepa Shivaram, who must be under 30, had a TikTok-like video shoot. President Biden grabbed a boba and milk tea in Las Vegas. Yes, her video had the headline, Food Stops Can Tell You a Lot About a Campaign. She said Asian Americans make up a critical voting bloc in Nevada, and experts on food and politics say that Biden ordering this drink, I'm adding the word drink, could also send a message to people who think he's too old for the job. Now, this is the kind of line where you're like, hands up here, Deepa, shallow Shivaram, shilling Shivaram. I have a question for you. Who's going to buy the sentence, Well, I thought Biden was too old for the job, and then he got a boba tea. Silly me. He got a trendy drink that somebody 20-something aide handed to him. Okay, I guess he's not senile. Then I scrolled all the way down the homepage looking for a Biden hearing story and just never found one. They did have one of these tiny desk concerts. These can be kind of cool, where they have a little tiny concert with maybe five songs inside the NPR headquarters in D.C. Very trendy. And this was a woman singer who dresses up like a drag queen. That's her shtick. I listened to it. The music wasn't bad, but she looked ridiculous. And NPR was all like, oh, we begged her to keep her humongous wig as a souvenir. You know, this is NPR. We love drag queens with your taxpayer dollars. Even though this isn't a drag queen, she just dresses like one. Then all the way down at the homepage, this is the funniest part. All the way at the bottom, you've reached the bottom, figuratively and literally. The headline, scientists studied how cicadas pee. Their insights could shed light on fluid dynamics. Yes, insect urine. You can find that on NPR. You just can't find anything out on the Biden scandals. We are paying money for this. They call it news. But remember, it's much easier to say this is a messaging machine. This is a narrative factory. That's why we call our site Newsbusters. We didn't love it at the beginning back in 2005, you know, because we were all sitting there going, who are you going to call Newsbusters? You know, we didn't love that. We've gotten used to it. I didn't like the sound that I don't want to be anti-news. I don't want to be anti-journalism. But I think a lot of times when we're criticizing something, when we highlight something, which may be the minority of a newscast, always remember, there's a lot of the newscast we leave uncriticized. When we really highlight something, it's because it's like, is this news or is this basically a badly disguised advertisement for the Democrats? That's what we focus on here. We're going to come after you if anti-Republican messaging is your news product of the day. We're going to expose you, and that's why you should come to Newsbusters. Once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.